If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 14 of season 2 of the Neil Reynolds Podcast, presented by NFL Game Pass. This is a special one for me because around the London games, ahead of the Miami Dolphins contest with the Jacksonville Jaguars, I got to catch up with a man who's responsible for me having a lifetime in American football and being able to go to Super Bowls, being able to cover training camps, being able to basically live a dream. When I was 12 years old, I got into American football because of a player called Dan Marino of the Miami Dolphins. And it's always great when you can get to chat to people and to thank them for the life they set up for you, even though they didn't know they were doing it. So yeah, it was a special conversation with Miami's number 13, the Hall of Fame quarterback, and you know all of the records. He retired with every meaningful passing record in the books. And yeah, me personally, I've had a great life, a great working life in the NFL, and it's because I got into the sport watching this guy. So here's my conversation with Dan Marino.
Dan, let's start with growing up in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Quite an area for quarterbacks. Like, did you know that as a young kid or not really?
Actually, yeah. You know, because you're a football fan growing up with the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, and I was a football fan. But, you know, my dad always, you know, talked about the tradition of the quarterbacks in Western PA and, you know, having Montana, Jim Kelly, you know, Namath, Unitas, Bland. I mean, I could just keep go on and on. And all these guys are Hall of Famers, too. So it was it's a pretty awesome tradition, yeah.
Could you always throw a spiral from a young age?
Yeah, I mean, not always, but pretty close. If it wasn't spiraling, it was going to the right place, though.
And that's the point, isn't it? Sometimes,
yeah.
Because with Peyton Manning, it wasn't always a spiral, but he read it and he got it there quick. Sometimes it's just about where you get it.
No, you get it, yeah, and then it's also, maybe if it doesn't spiral, it has the velocity, too. You need that, yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about the 1983 draft, and obviously it's a celebrated draft with six quarterbacks going in the first round.
Sure, yeah.
What's it like? You had to wait a bit.
I mean, it worked out great, but, you know, at the time, I was like, why wasn't I getting picked? You know, I felt like I'd be picked earlier than the 27th pick.
Yeah.
But the fact that you had, you know, so many great players in that draft, I can understand some of the reasoning because, you know, I think if you look back on it, there's six or seven Hall of Famers in that first round. And then with Elway and Kelly and myself, the quarterbacks, but also the other guys like Eric Dickerson, Darrell Green, Munchak, all those guys. So I can understand it, you know, but
Did you use it as motivation?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I wanted to prove, you know, not only to myself, but to other teams that passed on me that, you know, they should have picked me, But the best part was I actually went to Miami, got a chance to play with a great coach and great teammates there that had been in the Super Bowl the year before. So it really, you know, it was for a young player like myself, it was a great situation to be in.
Yeah. Do you think that helped you? Obviously, you're off the chart skills as well, but do you think it helped you transition? Because you come off the bench against the Raiders, then you become the starter, and then we know what you did in 84. So did that help being on a good team?
Oh, there's no doubt. Yeah. And the experience that we had, the great receivers, you know, I always talk about, you know, Duper and Clayton and Nat Moore and Jimmy Cephalo and then the tight ends, Bruce Hardy, all the guys that were, and then Tony Nathan coming out of backfield. It just set up for me as a young player who loved to throw the football to a bunch of guys that can actually go get it and do a, you know, a great job for you. So it was I think it was kind of the perfect situation for me.
How confident and how special did that, how confident did you feel in that 84 season? And did you, as a quarterback, you know when you're kind of on it and the numbers you put up were incredible.
You know, Neil, the fun thing was is we were just trying to win.
Yeah,
right?
You don't think about that.
You don't think about that, right? Yeah. And then it ends up that, you know, we did stuff that no one ever did before. And then it took them a long time to actually break that, too. So, but in the process, we were winning football games, trying to win. You know, I remember Mark Clayton telling me, or our PR guy, Harvey Green, telling me, you know, on the last game was against the Cowboys, he said, you know, Clayton, if he gets 3 touchdowns, he breaks the touchdown record. And you go in like, you know, that's probably not going to happen.
Right.
But then all of a sudden you play the game. It's in the process. We're going to come back with 2 minutes left. And then he ends up getting 3 touchdowns. So that's kind of how that whole year was in a, you know, a nutshell, is we were just trying to win football games.
Mm. How special was it to play in the Super Bowl? Of course, when people talk about you as a Hall of Famer, it was unfortunate he didn't win a Super Bowl. But do you still look back now and feel, well, I played in that game and I only got there the one time, but was it special to be there?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's definitely special. I think the one thing is, at times, you know, when you're young like that, I didn't take it for granted, but I was like, you know, okay, we lost the game, but I'm going to be back there, you know. And I hate to say it, you know, I haven't, but, and I didn't. So it's something that you just deal with as life goes on. I would say that's the only thing I never achieved in football. I mean, everything else I did except to win a Super Bowl.
You said haven't then, Dan, like there was still What's a that? Chance. You said haven't, like
I know,
still
I know.
A chance.
But
like,
I did, but
comeback
I,
coming.
But I did,
excited.
But I did correct myself, didn't I?
Know, yeah, I just reckon you can still play today. Yeah. That's what
oh, I,
mean.
I wish, man, I wish.
We'll talk about some of the records and the players in a second, but I have interviewed you a couple of times in the mm-hmm. past, and I think I get a sense that a lot of it for you was the locker room and the guys and the day-to-day. Just being a football player was special to you.
Well, that's, you know, that's all of it. It's being a part of a team. And it's like anything, anywhere in life that you work and whatever. You're, you know, a lot of times, you know, it's individual stuff at times, but you're part of a group that's working to accomplish something. And that's what makes, you know, football so great, because it is it's a team effort. And there's so many guys that are involved, and coaches, and, you know, and then also the fans that, you know, you talk about. So that really makes it special.
You mentioned Coach Shula. What was he like to play for?
Yeah, we just had a celebration for him, a celebration of life, because, you know, he passed during the COVID stuff, and seeing all the guys come back, it was really special, and the Dolphins did an outstanding job, you know, honoring him. And he was, once again, you know, I came in as a young guy, and I was fortunate to have a coach like that put a lot of pressure on me, actually, to be successful in a lot of different ways. So I was very fortunate to have a coach like that, you know, cared, and he was a tough guy, but that was good.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was good for not only me, for everybody.
So do you think he pushed you because he knew you were?
I think he pushed me and challenged me young, because I think he felt like I could handle it, you know, and do it, and also just to see if I could handle it. You know, sometimes you challenge, sometimes you challenge people in different positions just to see if, hey, are you going to be the guy or are you not? Like, and just kind of figure it out.
And the Marx Brothers, playing with them, you said that must have been a wonderful thing to come into. Because they could both stretch the field, but they could do so much, couldn't they, as players?
Well, I mean, I was blessed, because Mark Clayton came in as a late round pick, and we just connected right away.
Yeah.
And then I was there, and Mark Duper right away. We just connected as, you know, route running, all the things they did, me throwing it, timing, all that stuff. Then you add all that, and then you add the fact that they could run and go get the ball really well. Like, and they were special players, special players.
There are many games I'm sure we could discuss, but let's just pick out a couple.
Okay.
The 85 Bears.
Yep.
Who I work with, Sean Gale on Sky Sports now. The same.
Okay.
For the
Bears. I know Sean. Sean
said they recorded the Super Bowl Shuffle the day after you guys beat them. You're the only team to beat the 85 Bears. That must have been a really special night. Now, when you look back on it.
Yes. I've talked like about this many times, and the fact that we could play the game, play the Bears. They're undefeated. They're one of the, you know, best defenses that ever played the game, and all those things. And then plus we had the fact that it was, we were going to protect the you know, the 72 teams undefeated record. A lot of those guys were on the sideline. They were there, you know, all that stuff. And, no, it was outstanding. And, you know, a guy that's here on the trip, he's sitting over there. Yeah. Nat Moore had a great night, you know, for me and for the team, obviously. And it was special.
A couple of things that stand out when I think of that game. People thought of you as a pocket passer. Not necessarily that night. You were on the
Because their pass rush. They had a great pass rush. So there was some, you know, I was doing some rollouts a little bit. Yes, definitely. Survival is a good word.
Yeah, against that defense. And there was a touchdown that deflected up in the air.
Yes.
And I remember
Mark Clayton.
Yeah, and the commentator said, sometimes you would rather be lucky than good. And then you say something to Dan Hampton on the field. And then you kind of laugh and walk off. And I just wondered, did you think at the time?
I'm trying to think back. You know, no one's ever asked me that question. Trying to think back. I think he said something that was lucky or something like that, you know.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Something like that. Yeah, I do remember that. But that was, you know, that happens sometimes.
Yeah. Obviously,
it could deflect it into their hands, but it didn't.
Yeah, no, it could have done. That's right. You sort of go and create your own luck sometimes. Yep. Injuries were part of the game. And obviously, you had the Achilles injury in 93. I think it was 93.
Yeah.
First game back against New England.
Yes.
Irvin Fryer, and you're connected. That field, first of all, was a quagmire.
It was.
That day.
It rained really hard before the game.
And the baseball field.
And we had the baseball field. It was a mess.
How special was that game?
The memories were, like that, memories for me was the preseason. I didn't really have a good preseason because I was not sure about my ankle and I was still dealing with that. But then once you get in the stands on a regular game and, you know, with the fans in the stands and just, you know, the adrenaline and all that, it kind of, that went away.
Yeah.
And the memories were that we had to keep scoring because Drew Bledsoe and the Patriots were scoring. So it was kind of a shootout and it worked out great. And I always remember the last, fourth and, I threw a touchdown to Irving Fryer. It was like fourth and five or fourth and six. And it was right down on the side of the baseball field. Yeah. And that touchdown really was, that was fun.
You had a few of those games where you had to keep scoring.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, for a lot of time. Yes, yeah, a lot of times.
What about the, people always talk to me about games you played and the fake spike game. I mean, you had some memorable games against the Jets. Talk about keep scoring, the 51-45 game.
Oh, 51-48, I think it was. Yeah. Or 45, was it 45?
Yeah, I can't remember. They won in overtime, I think, in the end.
And we threw six touchdowns and lost.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen often.
No, what about the fake spike game? Tell me about that.
Well, the best part about that is, it was planned. No, it was planned. But the best part is we sent all those Jet fans home, you know. the stadium was going crazy, and then all of a sudden it was quiet. But Bernie Kosar, actually, I give Bernie credit because he came from Cleveland. He came with that actual thought of doing all that stuff, and he never used it in the game. And we practiced it, believe it or not. We practiced it all the time, but it was the perfect situation.
Yeah.
You know, coming down, and they didn't expect it. And it was, I think it was third down, and we had to kick a field goal to tie, probably.
Yeah.
And it just, it worked out perfect. It was great. And then the thing people don't know is Mark Ingram, the former Giants playing out with the Dolphins then, he had four touchdowns and they were all in the second half, which was pretty incredible in its own right.
Yeah. I think what was notable looking at that and looking back at that game, and I did look back at it before we chatted, was you would have won many games, you'd have had many yards. You're bouncing up and down like...
Oh, yeah,
like
because how you went... Yeah. Well... It's got to be fun, right? I mean, when you do something like that, it's and as a team and beat a rival, division rival, and it was an important game for us to get into playoffs eventually. And that's why you do it, because it's special. That's what you do it for.
Yeah. There was a period of your career where it seemed every week or every couple of weeks you were ticking off those career records, passing the great Fran Tarkenton. At the time, did it, or even now, do any of them mean... Did any of them mean more to you? Was one of them the one that you really wanted? Or, again, were you kind of in the moment and just playing?
I would say I was more just in the moment most of the time, playing a game. But the one that's important, to me, it's all about, you know, team and winning.
Yeah.
So, you know, throwing touchdowns helps you win. Like, scoring is part of the deal. So I would say that was, you know, a big deal for me. But mainly it was, you know, just winning football games.
Yeah.
And I think at the like Elway and I think close, we were very close in most wins at that time. Like it was, I don't know, 150 something or whatever. So yeah, that was kind of the thing that you love about it.
This is Jack Crawford, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello, everyone. It's producer Gary again. And as ever, at this stage of the podcast, I just want to give you some information about our presenting partner, NFL Game Pass. So, did you know that with NFL Game Pass, you're able to watch NFL games live and on demand? This coming weekend, we'll see Week 8 kick off with the Packers at the Cardinals, meaning you can tune in to watch every second of the action as it happens, or simply stream it directly to your device to watch at your convenience. Arizona remains the only undefeated team so far in the NFL this season, and although Green Bay lost in Week 1, they haven't lost since, meaning something is going to have to give. And the Bucs, we know are also in great form, are travelling to New Orleans to face the Saints in a season that has seen Tom Brady return to Foxborough and defeat the New England Patriots. But now, the Bucs experience the flip side of that coin. After Drew Brees' retirement at the end of last season, the Saints' offense is now led by Jameis Winston, who, as we know, spent his first five seasons in Florida. The first overall pick in the 2015 draft, Winston played five seasons in Tampa, where he became the all-time leader in passing yards and touchdown passes. But when Brady arrived on the scene in 2020, Winston moved on to the Saints, and he has now inherited the starting quarterback role from the legend that is Drew Brees. There are 13 more matches to choose from this weekend, and make sure you choose the best seat in the house across your favourite devices and subscribe to a weekly subscription on NFL Game Pass for only $5. And remember, if you want to see this fanboy moment of Neil when he met Dan Marino, the Neil Reynolds Podcast is also streaming for free on NFL Game Pass right now. To Neil, back to you and Dan.
Hi, I'm Bruce Arians, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
You did get to end your career with the Dolphins.
Yeah.
And at the time, maybe there was talk of there was opportunities elsewhere, and maybe one more, you know, like we see
now,
Peyton Manning did, or everyone kind of seems to finish somewhere else. How important is it now when you look back? I was a one-club man.
It was great. It's but I believe me, still sometimes I look back and I say, maybe I could have played a little longer. Yeah. Maybe I could have played for somebody else. What would that be? But then you just kind of, you know, you live with what your decision was. And I felt like after playing at one place 17 years and being a Dolphin for life, I say, you know, so I'm a Dolphin for life. And it was, it's been really great. Like, and actually being around the team now and being, you know, just part of something, it's special to me.
I saw your last pass. I was there in Canton, Ohio.
Okay,
you had
to
throw it with a gold jacket on.
That was cool.
There must have been some pressure there, but it was such a great moment when you kind of played to the crowd. And Clayton stands up.
It was actually my son Joey's idea, which was pretty cool. And then I said, well, I'll do that if you bring the football in the stadium. So he carried it around that whole morning. And then the fact that Mark, you know, those guys were sitting right up front.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a good idea at the time. Great. I had some college guys that were in a stance too. One friend of mine from University of Pittsburgh, he's like, you know, I could have just reached out and intercepted that.
Spoiled.
I'm like, come on, will you never
talk
do
to
that?
You again if you
But
pressure on Clayton.
Oh no, he's how many times we did that in our lives? Whoa. Yeah, so I thought that was probably the easiest one I've ever thrown. Yeah.
It was a memorable moment. It was great. Do you enjoy being around the game now and seeing? And we don't have to get into specifics, but I wonder now with the game, I've asked you this question before. I think you can throw for 7,000 yards probably in a season.
Well, I'd like to think so. You know, I'd like to think so. But the rules are definitely different. And look, there's guys, the quarterbacks you can look at, you know, Tom and other guys playing a lot longer than, you know, I did.
Yeah.
But, and it's two things. I think it's really their, you know, how they take care of their body, their health, and they don't get hit in certain ways that, you know, they could play longer. And it's great. I enjoy the watching the position and how they play it. And they play, most of the guys now are playing really, you know, top guys are playing at a high level, and it's fun to watch.
Do you think you guys maybe were, or you, and then the way you attack defense is maybe a little bit ahead of your time? Because Tony Nathan was a pass-catching running back.
I would say, ahead of our time. I'd say yes in some ways because we would go a lot. You know, we did the four wides. We did, you know, early and a lot of hurry-up offense when, you know, other teams weren't really doing that. Yeah. So, I think we were a little ahead of our time from that standpoint.
A couple more just to finish off. Much was made of your release, the lightning quick release.
Right.
Natural or trained? Can you train that?
I think it's a combination. Your release is a combination of where you want to go with the ball and how your mechanics and how you throw the ball. And I would say yes, you can be trained because my dad is the one that taught me how to throw a football, and he always talked about throwing with no wasted motion, and a short stride and be in position all the time. He always had me jump rope because he said, inside that little pocket, it's almost like boxing because you got to move and keep your body in position. So I think it's trained, yes, to a certain extent. Then I think it's just knowing the game and knowing when to throw the ball, to get rid of it.
And I know you've been around Dolphins quarterbacks over the years. I remember chatting to Ryan Tannehill, who said you gave him some advice, and he said you said see it, throw it. So sometimes maybe
because you got to decide. You got to decide, but all that is just make your decision and let it go. Don't hold the ball and it gives you much more of an advantage. And Ryan's doing great, so I'm happy for him.
What's the key to a quarterback? Because there's so many different elements to it. What's the thing that goes through every quarterback? If you're going to be an elite one, what do you need to have?
I think you got to be the main thing is competitive. You got to be really competitive, not want to lose. If you have all the talent, that's the biggest thing. Mm. It's just wanting to compete, enjoying your job, being like a real pro. That's the fun part of it.
And last one, what's it been like seeing the growth of the sport here in the UK? You played here in 1988.
Yeah, don't tell anybody.
And now, even now, stadiums when games are played here are sprinkled throughout the stadium with number 13 Merino jerseys. What's that like?
It feels good because, just to have that little bit of a legacy, and I was one of the first games played over here, and the fact that the game's expanding and the fans here just, you can tell that they enjoy the NFL and enjoy the game. And it's fun, and it's fun to come over here and see that. So, I'm excited about the game this week, and the C13 jerseys out there is pretty cool. Yeah.
I don't want to sound like a stalker. I've told you this before, Dan, but my dad used to watch the NFL.
Yes.
In the 80s. I had very little interest. And this curly-haired rookie came trotting on against the Raiders, and the commentators were making a fuss, and I just sat up, took notice, and I watched it. And then I became a fan, and I've had a life in football, going to Super Bowls, going to training camps, and it was because of 13. So
I appreciate that.
It's a bit weird when someone tells you
that. No, it's okay, man. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been a great life.
That's good. Good. I appreciate it. I'm glad you're a fan.
There you are. That's my conversation with Dan Marino. So from chatting to one of my heroes to another, let's bring in producer Gary Hayes, who's still got the chance of his name from the fans at the live show ringing in his ears. How are you, Gary?
That's become my ringtone on my phone now.
Oh, I bet it has. I couldn't believe it. I walked out to like a tumbleweed blowing across the floor. I don't think people sort of realized I was coming out almost. And well, I hope they didn't. And to deathly silence, to the point where I walk back in and then we'll walk back out again. And then I introduce you and you get a round of applause and chanting your name and everything. Absolute ridiculousness.
A good producer would have been at the front telling everyone to clap, wouldn't he, like they do on TV? But
exactly. No, you didn't. But you stirred it up once it was your turn. Fantastic.
So now whenever I get a phone call, I hear is Martin Liddon and a few others cheering my name.
Oh my goodness, yes. And I saw you having a little after party drinky poos with those guys, but we won't get into that. Let's get into the mailbag instead. Oh, are we going to get into that?
We are sort of going to get into it because, it is mailbag time, as you said. And we've got two questions this week. Right. And obviously, as it was...
I thought we had one.
Well, we've got two. I thought I'd surprise you with an extra one. So as it is a Dan Marino special, therefore it's sort of a Miami Dolphin special... the first question this week is from Gary Gremlaw.
Fantastic.
And Gary Gremlaw wants to know, Neil, why you shot off so early that night, because we were having a load of drinks and it was good fun. You should have stuck around.
Well, I'll tell you why, because I know the crowd you ended up hanging with, and there's no such thing as a quick drink. And it was a busy week, you know, I got to protect the voice, you know, got to protect the brand. So yeah, I was not getting involved in any of that naughtiness, because I know how that gang operate. Those Finns Nation UK fan club guys. And I was very disappointed to see you involved, Gary. Saw your pictures, you know, coming through on social media. And yes, I thought, well, they've taken one of us down, but, you know, I'm still standing. So ever the professional, not going to touch that with a barge pole.
I must admit, I did get worried because as I left, they were like, oh, come on, come for one drink. I said, okay, I'll do one drink. And because it's obviously Spurs, it's enemy territory, because I'm Chelsea, if anyone didn't know. And so we went and had one drink, but then I soon realised what you're saying, because then Martin was like, oh, we said we'd get the 9:45 train, but, you know, we can get a 9:30 train, couldn't we? And then the trains just started getting later and later, and in the end... Stuart and I just went, look, Stuart, I've got to go, mate. And we just went, yeah, let's get out of here. And then everyone did follow us, but yeah, it was funny. So, Neil, that was the my Dolphins night out, my night out with Martin and the crew. But back to serious business, we do have a question for the mailbag from a listener, from a fan, and it's from Clive Pack. Thank you for sending your full name in, Clive, unlike our friend from Sunderland the other week. I joke. I know it's from Newcastle, and I know I offended him. I apologise. So, Neil, how good do you think Reggie White was?
Oh, Reggie White was fantastic. And anyone who's been a long-time fan of the NFL, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are, they won't need me to tell them how special Reggie White was. I think as a player, as a person, just an incredible defensive lineman for the Philadelphia Eagles, sort of late 80s, early 90s. And then Gary, he was the first big free agent in the NFL. So he was the one that led the charge for free agency for players who were really stuck with their teams almost their entire careers. He engineered a big move from Philadelphia to Green Bay. He went there and won a Super Bowl with the Packers. And in that Super Bowl against the New England Patriots, he was literally picking up offensive linemen with one hand, throwing them, there's videos, you can check it out, throwing them to one side and then getting to the quarterback. He was an absolute beast of a player. He was so the All-Pro, of course, and our listeners will know this, is the best of the best. And he was a 13 times an All-Pro player. He was on the All-Decades team for the 1980s and the All-Decade team for the 1990s, the NFL's 100th anniversary team. He was on that as well. He was a minister as well. He was a qualified minister. So whenever he would record one of his 198 sacks, I'm sure he kind of blessed the quarterback on the way up when he brought him back up. Just a really, really sort of upstanding individual, an outstanding dominating defender. Gary died when he was 43 years of age, unfortunately. He suffered from sleep apnea. And then had some heart issues. He just died suddenly. And I don't know if the sleep thing was a part of that. But yeah, one of the true legends of the game. He really was. He's certainly worth looking up as you continue your NFL education.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, he did get mentioned in our last episode, which, you know, before the live show and the Dan Marino episode, he was mentioned in there.
No, he was an absolute... absolute legend. Yeah, Warwick Dunn was talking, wasn't he, about trying to block the great Reggie White.
I mean, saying, you got me, little fella. You got me,
yeah,
little
exactly.
fella.
Yeah, no, really nice guy. But yeah, not a nice guy. When you think about how big offensive linemen are in the NFL, and he was literally tossing them aside like they were ragdolls. It was impressive. And yeah, sad that he was gone. But his mark is still kind of living on today, because a lot of people are compared to him when they look at records for bringing down quarterbacks. And every March, when players get to enjoy free agency and go and sign new deals with other teams, he's the one that kind of set everyone free. So, his kind of spirit and stuff still lives on. So, yeah, good question, that one. So, thanks for that. And thank you for all your efforts, Gary. And we'll be back next week. The Magical Mystery Tour continues.
Well, this is what I was going to ask you, actually. Before we get on to that, I was going to say, that's one good question. I've got an even better question for you. Who's next week?
You do. As a producer, as the producer, you always like to know this. And, we're at that stage now where we're kind of deep into the season. So, you know, I'm moving around my contacts book, got a few requests in with teams. It gets hard at this time of year, right in the middle of the season, to get long periods of time with players. But yes, that's a long-winded way of saying I don't know yet, but we will have someone, so join us.
Well, I'll get some sleepless nights wondering who it's going
to
be.
Exactly, there you go. So my thanks to producer Gary Hayes, thanks to Dan Marino for this episode, and thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time. To the Neil Reynolds podcast. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds, while Gary Hayes is our producer. Gary and I have also written this series together. Our consultant producers are Kerry Levy, Nick Lapworth, and Neil Pacchietto. Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork, including the graphics and videos across our social media channels. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. If you'd like to keep up to date with everything we're doing throughout the season, then please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at the NR Podcast. My personal account is also at Neil Reynolds NFL. If you've enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more like it, then visit highway61.media. That's HWY61.media. Please tell your friends about the podcast, help spread the word. Better still, leave us a rating and a review wherever you're listening. This has been another Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.